Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
So, texting with Rick this morning, and I'm finding out valuable information about him during this pandemic, Chris. Some real insight into the man that Rick is becoming as we're all locked away in our homes.
What we got, Dave?
Apparently, he's taken up gardening. Apparently, that is something very high up on the priority list right now. Now, I don't know, Chris, if that means like just like flowers, if he's involved maybe, you know, vegetables or how deep this goes, but I thought it was a very interesting text that I received this morning.
Very interesting. Yes. That's his new hobby as this pandemic is going on. I guess you have all of this downtime. You got to figure out something constructive to do. Some people have chosen to work out. Others read a book. For Rick, it's digging in the backyard.
Yes.
Now I would have to ask one Richard DiPietro, what is his tool of choice?
I prefer the hoe. I'm a big hoe guy. We're now having what we're doing now, Chris, and I also made biscuits yesterday, is
you're really a Renaissance man, by the way.
I can't stand going to the grocery store, so I'm trying to make my house, the area surrounding my house,
making soap brownies at some point.
Whatever it takes at this point.
I got herbs, veggies.
like he's just going to take like household, because he doesn't want to go to the store, so he's going to like take like just household items and turn them into edible foods.
Okay.
Well, if you're talking brownies, then, I mean, that may be something that ends up in the garden, too, to sprinkle into those brownies.
That's immediately where I went when Dave brought up brownies.
Yeah. Some herb brownies. No, but here's the thing, though, Dave. The kids like to do it. I mean, I never was into it, but it makes perfect sense. We cook every single meal at home. I'm not interested in going to the store to get basil or cilantro or whatever else we need. So one of the days I went to the grocery store, I ran over and picked up some seeds, and I picked up some plants of rosemary and thyme and everything else. So, listen, I don't think I'm good at it. I'm not sure yet, but so far so good.
Sounds like you're one step away from building a doomsday bunker. That's what it feels like. Like
it's
first starts with growing your own food, then it starts with building the bunker because you think the end of the world is happening.
I believe that Cassie would, if you said, Cass, listen, I'm going to go to Home Depot. I'm going to really load up on shovels and the like and concrete, and I'm going to build us a bunker below the Earth's surface. I think she would be all on board with that.
I'm not sure if I should tell you this or not. Maybe I will. No, she actually the other day, the end of last week, she's like, you got to come look at this. I said, what are we looking at? She goes, you got to check these things out. You're going to love it. I said, why am I going to love it? She goes, it makes perfect sense. She actually shows me these like luxury bunkers. I think they're in, I want to say Dakota, in one of the Dakotas, North or South Dakota. They have legitimately luxury bunkers that you can buy. And she was interested, she's like hell bent on wanting to do it.
I didn't know they did luxury anything in the Dakotas. Maybe that's just
These things are sweet. These are sweet.
Really?
Gorgeous bunkers. Gorgeous bunkers.
Just tricked out. Thinking about the most awesome man cave, but below ground.
But it's a legitimate cave, yeah. It's okay. Like when those people go, like rich people go, like, oh, we're going on safari, and then they stay in
lavish tents.
Yeah, it's like a Ritz-Carlton. You ain't on safari. What are you kidding? I mean, who are you kidding right now? That's what these bunkers are.
Oh my goodness! All right, so as he's gardening, as he's baking biscuits, he's also watching episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance a second time yesterday. So Rick, in your rewatching of The Last Dance parts 3 and 4, did you gather any new information? Were there any hidden messages in there? Did you change your opinion at all about the Michael Jordan docudrama that ESPN is putting on?
Well, I actually got more upset. I wanted to watch it again just to see if my opinion would change as far as, you know, how the Pistons, you know, approach just walking off the court and the whole, you know, excuse the Celtics did it to us, which I mean, just because one team does it doesn't mean it's right. That was one takeaway. I had actually more respect than, again, going back to your point that this drives you crazy as a Knicks fan. Oh. I mean, again, hiring Phil Jackson to be the president as opposed to the coach, I mean, it made no sense at the time. You were excited. But, I mean, what he was able to do as a coach forget what, I mean, the disaster that was the New York Knicks. I mean, super impressive with what he was able to do with all those egos and everything else. Especially on top of it, and I realized this the first time, but then watching it again the second time, how much Michael Jordan loved Doug Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden to have him fired and bring in Phil Jackson, where Phil Jackson's message was, okay, we're going to take the ball out of your hands as opposed to putting it in your hands, and getting him to buy into that the way he did. I think that's, I mean, you're talking about the best player in the world. Getting him to buy into that was impressive as well.
Well, I think the failure had a lot to do with that, right? Because even though Doug Collins featured him in his offense, it didn't lead to the result that Jordan was looking for, which is ultimately winning the last game you play in. And with Phil Jackson, it felt like he was providing Michael Jordan a path to be able to accomplish what he wanted to, which is to be mentioned in the same breath as a Larry Bird, as a Magic Johnson. And in order to do that, you got to win championships. So that's what drove him. That's why he was so consumed with trying to do everything that it takes to win. And then when you finally get a coach in place that can provide you an avenue in order to accomplish that, and then you have success, albeit in the second season and not in the first, I can understand why Michael Jordan had the attachment that he did to Phil Jackson and why he refused to play for another coach.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Rick. And in watching the documentary, and I didn't rewatch it. I watched it, you know, on Sunday night. It is so maddening to me. And I hold grudges and I get upset with like the past of sports, and it doesn't go away for me. But just this, first of all, the idea. Even in watching that documentary, what about watching Phil Jackson? Did you even for a moment think to yourself, boy, this guy would be a great talent evaluator? No, he was the best at molding personalities and getting people to get along and realizing when to push a guy and not push a guy. But the idea that the Knicks swept in and thought that if we put him in place to be the decision maker as far as who to draft, it's mind-boggling to me, and it's infuriating to me.
Yeah, it made no sense. I mean, the only reason it made sense was because of his name. I mean, that's when you're talking about New York Knicks fans, you know, with Stephen A. saying we should pick it in front of the Garden. I mean, the appeal of having someone like Phil Jackson, I mean, okay, that's exciting, but the reality is he's never done the job before. So, I mean, unless you're hiring him to do both, pick the talent and coach the talent, I mean, it was going to be a recipe for what you got, which was a disaster. I mean, was a disaster. It was gross.
Well, I think the unfortunate part is that you had to move off of somebody that I thought could be a good coach for the Knicks, which was Mike Woodson. But, I mean, with the Phil Jackson thing, I think we're having a little bit of revisionist history just because I recognize that Phil Jackson had never been an executive in basketball before, but Phil Jackson brought something to the Knicks that the fan base was clamoring for, which was some credibility. I mean, when he's got 11 championship rings, it's like, okay, this guy knows something about winning at a high level in the NBA. You thought that he would be able to bring a little bit of that to the organization, along with maybe some cachet that could potentially bring some more talent to the team. It just didn't all work out like that. But my biggest question about why it didn't work out is not whether or not he could have been competent. It's whether or not he actually wanted to do the job. Because it doesn't sound like he was as attentive as he was as an executive as what we saw when he was on the sidelines as the head coach for the Bulls and the Lakers.
You know what the other thing, though, too, is? And I think it was the timing of when the Bulls made the move. I think it was a lot easier. And I don't think, don't get me wrong, I don't think it was easy, especially when you see how it kind of unfolded, where Doug Collins pretty much said, like, he saw the writing on the wall, the relationship between Phil and Tex Winter. Like, it just felt like at some point Phil was going to be the head coach.
Right.
I mean, if all of a sudden now you're going to transition from Doug Collins to this triangle system with Phil Jackson, who's never been an NBA coach, right? He's been the assistant. You're getting Michael Jordan in this team in its prime. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to all of a sudden now Phil taking over the Knicks with Derek Fisher, who's never coached before, in Carmelo Anthony probably on the back nine as opposed to in his prime. Like, there wasn't enough talent on the Knicks team to have them buy in, I think, the way that the Bulls were able to buy in, because they were having success. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were already having success. The Knicks weren't at that point where they were having success.
Right.
They were a dumpster fire.
Total dumpster fire. 800-919-3776 if you want to talk about the last dance with us here on 98.7 ESPN. But also, Chris, you said it. We thought that he was going to come with this cachet and be this, you know, the savior. It couldn't have been more opposite. I mean, you heard the Jay Williams stories where he's going to watch guys in the combine and he's falling asleep. Like, really, he was... He made the Knicks have been a laughing stock of the league for a long time. He perpetuated that. Like, everything that we thought he was going to come here and do, he did the exact opposite, and that includes drafting the wrong guys. I mean, everything he touched, for the most part, outside of maybe the Porzingis pick, just it turned to, you know what, it was awful.
No, it was bad, Dave, and you feel bad for the fan base. I actually also feel bad for James Dolan because he did pay $12 million a year to Phil, and he didn't get much in return for his commitment to trying to get this thing fixed. But I look at the Phil Jackson situation, and you recognize how you could utilize him as an asset, his basketball mind, but I just felt like you probably should have gotten somebody more seasoned, somebody that could be or that has been a front office executive to try to help him, you know, navigate through some of the challenges that comes along with dealing with today's athlete and understanding today's landscape in the NBA. It's clear that Phil was out of touch when he took the job with the Knicks, and he didn't proactively try to get involved in terms of understanding what it was going to take in order to get players to come here and then to put a winning product on the court.
You know what else, too, though? I mean, in watching that a second time and just seeing how the whole thing unfolded, it almost felt like Phil's mindset going into taking over with the Knicks was kind of have the same role that Tex Winter had with him. You know what I mean? Like behind the scenes, pulling all the strings of the head coach, and then the head coach would take his message and then pass it on to the team. But because they weren't winning, and you know, Derek Fisher, you know, wasn't maybe as hell-bent on having the triangle as the system, he kind of played more into, okay, you know, the players want something else, and we're having more success doing something else, then we're going to move away from it, right? Remember that? I mean, remember that whole thing, how that thing unfolded?
Mm-hmm. Him doing it triangle felt like, camp and all of that stuff?
Exactly right. And then all of a sudden he goes with Rambis, who he feels like he can trust more, that whatever he tells Rambis, Rambis is going to do. And for some reason, I mean, I don't know if it was just Melo's mindset at the time. I mean, you heard Chauncey Billups talk about Melo's mindset. You know, as long as he gets his points, the rest doesn't really matter. Maybe the fact that Melo didn't buy into it was also part of the problem. But I mean, just it was a complete failure. And it does. I mean, it still bothers me to this day because, I mean, it set the Knicks back.
Rick, you say that in passing, but that's probably the biggest part of why Phil Jackson actually failed at this job. It's because he couldn't get Carmelo Anthony to buy in. And he puts out this cryptic message on social media or in the media and saying how you can't get a leopard to change his spots and all that other stuff. When you don't have good relationships with your best players in today's NBA, you are doomed to fail. I mean, David Fizdale was a disaster with the Knicks, but he also failed down in Memphis because he didn't have great relationships with Conley and Marc Gasol. So in today's NBA, the most important job for a coach, for a GM, for a president of basketball operations is to have a good relationship with your star player so you can get everybody else on the team on board with whatever direction you're trying to go in. And Phil Jackson failed miserably at trying to do that. Now, maybe that's Carmelo in part recognizing that this guy is asleep at the wheel. But again, when you hire somebody in this role to oversee the organization, you damn well better make sure that this person is motivated to try to make it work. It was clear that Phil Jackson wasn't.
Yeah, I think Phil wanted his cake and he wanted to eat it too. I remember before he took the Knicks job, I mean, there was some talk about him going back to the Lakers and only coaching home games because of his
health. I remember that.
Of course, right, because he couldn't sit and he couldn't travel like that, yes.
Yeah, so it almost felt like, I mean, he wants to have the title as president, but he wants to, behind the scenes, also coach the team, which, I mean, trust me, I lived that movie. It does not. I mean, when you have the GM pulling the coach's string, that never works. Never works. But listen, it's not just Phil. I mean, you can sit here and blame and hate on Phil. I mean, let's not forget, too, that Phil was supposed to have complete autonomy. And when it came time with Carmelo's contract, it didn't seem like Phil was hell-bent on having Carmelo Anthony as a part of the New York Knicks.
No, that was kind of forced his hand. Yeah, you're right.
So the whole thing was destined. I mean, the whole thing was going to be destined to fail. It really was.
Maybe we'll come out of this pandemic and things will change. Maybe up will be down will be up, right will be left, and then it will come out. The Knicks will be like functional. And,
well, Ohio is Florida now, Dave, so I guess anything's possible.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, though, too, Dave, and tell me if you agree with this, because I was watching a lot of Isaiah Thomas yesterday and, you know, him kind of reflecting and then watching, you know, The Last Dance back and seeing Jordan's reaction when they showed him the video of Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like
so
I told
angry.
This is it. Yeah, but I mean, the one thing that keeps getting overlooked a little bit, and I get it, it wasn't just, you know, that Isaiah Thomas didn't shake hands after they lost that series. I mean, let's not forget, you know, Isaiah had, you know, a complicated relationship at the time with Magic Johnson. I mean, Detroit was going up against Larry Bird in Boston. So you're talking about, and then Pippen spoke out against Isaiah Thomas. You're talking
the only
about,
person, you know, to beat all three of them, though. The only
exactly
person
right.
to beat all three of them.
Exactly
say what
right.
you but want about think, Zeke.
But just think about that. You're talking about four of the most influential basketball players in the NBA at the time. If you got mm-hmm. four guys saying that, first of all, they wanted Michael Jordan on that dream team, but you have four guys, you got Bird, Magic, Michael, and Pippen saying we're all set with Isaiah Thomas. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Especially when the guy picking the players is the one that drafted Michael Jordan.
I get it, but it's not right. I mean, in theory, you're supposed to put the best, I don't know, what do they have, 12 or 13 guys on that dream team if you include Christian Laettner. You're supposed to put the best 12 guys or 13 on that team. There's no way you could tell me that Isaiah Thomas is not worthy of being on that team. No way.
Well, no one's saying that he's not, but no one's saying that he's not worthy. I mean, if it was a question between, an Olympic situation where it was so closely contested, that if you're not having the best team, that you probably won't win a gold medal, then maybe it's a different decision. But, I mean, you got Michael Jordan in that dream team. You don't think that they thought they were just going to stroll right through?
Well, they did.
The Olympics. And, okay, so, yeah, that's why they make that decision. Because there was never a fear that they were going to lose. They could afford to not have Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, if not having Isaiah Thomas means I have Michael Jordan, that's an easy decision for anybody to make.
Yeah, but it's not the right decision.
Well, you can say it's not the right decision, but it wasn't right what Isaiah Thomas did after they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals back in 1991. It wasn't right.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Okay. Correct me.
Isaiah Thomas made his bed. He's got to sleep in it.
So Jordan clearly felt the way. Now you're destined to have guys mistreat you?
Time out. Correct me if I'm wrong, though, right? Who was one of the guys that you saw last night? Well, not last night because I watched last night, but on Sunday night that told the coach, I don't think this is right. Put me back in the game. Who was that guy?
I don't remember.
For the Pistons. It was John Sally. Where did John Sally end up playing and winning a championship?
Chicago.
Chicago Bulls. You don't think is that a coincidence?
No.
That Michael Jordan probably had enough respect for John Sally that he stayed in and did what you were supposed to do as far as sportsmanship was concerned?
No, I'm sure. But again, my point is, I agree with you. That Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons, and it sounds like Laimbeer was really the spearhead of that, but it doesn't matter who it was.
Which makes it worse, though. Which makes it worse for Isaiah Thomas. He's supposed to be,
you're the best player on the team. You're supposed to be the leader of the team.
Exactly right. You're saying, I speak for myself, I speak for the city of Detroit, and I speak for the Pistons. Well, why didn't you speak for the Pistons when you made that decision? You didn't like it when the Celtics did it. And then, you just beat the crap out of the Chicago Bulls for three straight years, and every single year that you beat them, Michael Jordan sat on the court and shook everyone's hand.
And now
you're
trying to revisit it and say that it was par for the course when Michael Jordan, leading up to that, decided to shake your hand each of the three times you put him out of the postseason.
And said that he was more heartbroken than he's ever been in his entire professional career. Like, you could see, it ate him up. I mean, that's the one thing, of all the things you see during this, it's the determination of this guy. Like, this motivation to win that no matter what potentially got in his way, he would run through a wall to win. So you know that when they lost that game 7, it must have eaten him alive to go out there and do it. He did the right thing. I give him credit for that, right? Isaiah Thomas didn't, Pistons didn't. You beat him up over that, deservedly so. My point is, because they screwed up by not shaking hands, now it means that Michael Jordan and Pippen and Magic and Bird and whoever else decides to, you can leave Isaiah Thomas off the team. I'm sorry, I don't think that two wrongs make a right in this situation.
No, two wrongs don't make a right, but I mean, you can't fault Michael Jordan for being upset and being equally as petty as Isaiah Thomas was in the moment when he lost the Eastern Conference Finals. Michael Jordan just took it to the next level. Michael Jordan was a better player. Michael Jordan's better at being petty. Shouldn't be a surprise for anybody.
Okay.
Michael Jordan is just better than Isaiah Thomas when it comes to all things basketball. Not to say that Isaiah isn't an all-time great, but Isaiah Thomas made his bed when he decided not to shake his hand. It was classless. It was disgraceful. And clearly that affects Michael Jordan even to this day. So, yeah, I could understand Michael Jordan with that 92 team deciding, you know what, if I'm going to be a part of this and this is going to be known as the greatest assembly of basketball players of all time, yeah, I don't want Isaiah Thomas on this stage with me. I get it. I understand it. I'm not saying that it's right, but I actually understand that. It wasn't that Michael Jordan started this. He just finished it.
Yeah, don't let Dave fool you. I mean, Dave's trying to hear, play, two wrongs don't make a right. If you were given the decision at that time, this is not years and years, past when, this rivalry, this whole thing started. And this is fairly fresh. if you're given the decision, would you like to spend the next however many weeks or months with Isaiah Thomas or not? And you hate him that much? Well, I mean, what's your decision going to be?
I understand why he wanted to do that, but USA Basketball should have said he's one of the best players and we want him on the team.
Yeah, but unfortunately for USA Basketball, Michael Jordan had already won a gold medal. So if Michael Jordan decided, hey, well, if you're going to take Isaiah Thomas, I'm all set. I mean, who are you going to pick? Michael Jordan or Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, you'll take Jordan. But they could have won that gold medal without Michael Jordan.
Or Bird. Yeah, but if Bird doesn't like him, Magic doesn't like him, Pippen doesn't like him, and Jordan doesn't like him, what are your chances? I mean, what are the chances you're going to make the team, honestly?
Yeah, must have been some kind of guy, by the way, huh? You watch Magic Johnson and you saw after they won that title that Magic said, I met him in the hallway to hug him. And even though I was upset that we lost, I was so happy for him. And then Isaiah Thomas can't even shake the hand of Michael Jordan. It's just, it shows the kind of two differing viewpoints of those guys.
Yeah, but you can clearly, I mean, that for any athlete, I mean, the biggest thing for any athlete in a locker room, I mean, going against your opponent, and Chris will agree with me, is
respect.
And that was the ultimate sign of disrespect. They finally earned it. I mean, it wasn't like, you know what I mean? Like, they spent 3 years trying to get over this hurdle. You know, Michael Jordan has, you know, all of a sudden he's lifting weights. He has a gym put in his house. Like, this was ultimately what turned Michael Jordan into the greatest of all time, probably. Like, that he had to take all these extra steps to finally beat the Detroit Pistons. I mean, how don't you respect that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like especially when he gave you that respect. If when the Pistons won, if Jordan and the Bulls walked off the court or did something Bush League and that was their response, I guess I could understand it. But the fact is that did not happen. Just the opposite happened. And you would think that the Pistons would give the same respect, especially being led by Isaiah Thomas, and they didn't. They went the other way. I'm not defending it at all. I think that what Isaiah Thomas did was terrible.
Yeah, but listen.
Yeah, but you sound like from your perspective, Isaiah Thomas is a sympathetic figure in all of this. Dave.
No, I think that Michael Jordan, if he went to bat to keep Isaiah Thomas off the Dream Team, it's a bad job and a bad look for him. Not that I think Isaiah is sympathetic. I think
But it wasn't just Michael. I mean, Pippen spoke out against him. I mean, Magic didn't like him at the time. Bird didn't like him. You know what you always say, and here's the best way for me to describe it. You always say this. Like, we'll talk about. I don't care if it's Rodman or you know, the guy who pretends to try to be like Rodman, Draymond Green, like whoever it is. I mean, you always say, love them on your team, hate to play against them, right? Because for some reason, like, he's a pest, he bothers you. You kind of don't really have...
Samuelson of the NHL.
Exactly right. So you're talking about a Detroit Pistons team that probably wasn't as talented as... Not probably, they weren't as talented as the Bulls or the Celtics. But they were that team that you hated to play against. They drove you crazy, right? You just hated them. So I'm not saying it's right, but maybe, potentially, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because I don't think it's right, period. But if you had that level of hatred because of the way the team played, maybe I could understand. I mean, especially when you see some of the foul, like, I mean, there were a couple times you watched Larry Bird get demolished.
Larry Bird, when he fell on the ground one time, was throwing blows at Dennis Rodman. Like, it was insane.
Did you see his knee? See his knee? He almost blew his leg off. So I can understand, like, there's some animosity, right? Like, you hate how they play. Like, they're trying to hurt you. So I can understand, like, if someone's trying to hurt you and end your career so they can win, that would bother me, too. Like, when Sean Avery jumped on my head when I came back from a concussion because he knew I came back from a concussion, yeah, that bothered me. Like, because you're affecting my livelihood. So maybe, I mean, potentially, I could understand, like, the Celtics feeling away and not, you know, not wanting to shake Detroit's hand because they have no respect for them. But there was nothing that the Chicago Bulls did in the course, besides blow your doors off, during the course of that Eastern Conference Finals, that would have led you to have to lose any respect for Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
No, in fact, just the opposite. You saw in that game four when Dennis Rodman, it was such a dirty play. I mean, two hands pushed Scottie Pippen from behind when you knew that the game was on the verge of being out of reach. No, even when they were beating you up on the scoreboard, you still were acting like fools with that dirty brand of play. So it never went away from Detroit.
No, it never went away from Detroit, Dave. But I mean, even in looking at it from the Bulls' perspective, I mean, they didn't think that the way the Pistons conducted themselves, the way that they played the game, was in the best interest of basketball. And when we're talking about the Dream Team and representing the United States on the biggest stage in the world, I mean, I can understand if Michael Jordan felt like what the Pistons did was disrespectful to the game of basketball. I can understand him not wanting Isaiah Thomas to be on that stage with him.
But
I completely
Thomas
get it.
Thomas wasn't that kind of player.
No, and I'm not saying that he was, Dave, I'm not saying that he was that type of player, but he's the ambassador for the Detroit Pistons. He's the face of the franchise. So he, in fact, stands and represents the brand that is the Bad Boys. That's how Isaiah Thomas cannot be separated from the Bad Boys Pistons, even though it was Laimbeer and Mahorn and Rodman doing all the dirty work. You can't take that away. That is a part of Isaiah Thomas's legacy. So if you're going to ask him, or if you're going to ask Jordan, do you want Isaiah Thomas to be a part of the Dream Team? I can understand for a couple of different reasons why Jordan wouldn't want to share that stage with him.
For me, I would guess, and who knows, unless we get Michael as a or one of the Bulls members as a guest, is that it was the way that they were treated rather than the representation of not appreciating the way that the Pistons played basketball.
You can frame it however you want. It's disrespect. It was disrespect.
All right.
It was disrespect. He felt like he was disrespected by Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons. And he did not want Isaiah Thomas around him and the Dream Team.
Which is petty.
Yeah, but I mean, it was Michael Jordan responding to Isaiah Thomas firing the first shot and the Pistons walking off the floor and deciding not to shake their hand.
You're right.
They're on record saying, the Bulls are on record saying that they didn't think the Pistons were good for the game of basketball. They said that. So if they're not good for the game of basketball, why would you want the face of that team as a part of the Dream Team?
Because he was a great player.
Yeah, he was a good player. No one
was a great player.
He should have been on the team.
Who's saying Isaiah Thomas is not a great player? I didn't say that. Nobody's saying that.
But that's why
Isaiah Thomas is clearly worthy of being on the Dream Team. He's one of the greatest point guards of all time. But he's not the greatest player of all time.
Chris's point is in, with that team, he wasn't a necessity. Yeah, he's a great player. He deserved to be on the team. But he wasn't a necessity for them to win. Had he been a necessity, then maybe there's a different discussion. Maybe Jordan decides to suck it up because he wants to go and win the gold medal. But there was never any fear with the amount of talent they had put together that they were going to go into that Olympics and not just roll everybody. What do they always teach you? I was told this, and at the time, because you're young and dumb and you feel like, you know, this is all this whole professional athlete thing, you being able to swing it is going to last forever. Be careful, because all those people that you treat poorly on the way up, you never know what's going to happen on the way down, because you may need some of those people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the world is based on relationships. So if you act like a jerk on the way up, when you're at the height of your powers, watch what happens when you're on the way down. And all those people all those relationships you ruined now come back to haunt you.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
And that's what happened.
I'm not arguing.
Which is why I don't feel bad for Isaiah. I don't.
So he never had a chance to play in the Olympics.
I don't.
He's supposed to be the leader of the team. I mean, listen, it's Bill Laimbeer. I get it. I mean, he's a tough guy, but you're Isaiah Thomas. I mean, if I don't care what Bill Laimbeer says. If you don't think it's right, then you say, hey, Bill, you do what you want. I don't feel like this is the same thing John Sally did. This doesn't feel
right. Yeah, I want to be out on the court. I agree with you.
So, I mean, I can listen. Is it petty? It's absolutely
It's very
petty.
Petty.
But if it affected you the way it affected Michael Jordan, and now all of a sudden he's given the opportunity to put an end to it.
Rick, 30 years later, Jordan still doesn't like
it. I love it.
During the documentary, they wanted to show him a video of what Isaiah had to say about it, and he didn't want to hear it.
I love it.
How he said, you can show me whatever you want to show me. I don't care.
Isn't that what we want from our athletes, though? Like that it bothered you to the point that if I show it to
you
30 years later, it's still going to horrify you?
You know what? Having spent the last 24 minutes talking about this, I know exactly why it still bothers him, and I know why. You know, it took that, you know, NBA show where Magic and Isaiah talked it out. I think Isaiah Thomas.
Go ahead.
I think he's one of those guys that you can't stand, Chris. One of those guys, the phony guy, like the Eddie Haskell.
Front runner?
Yeah, like front runner, like one guy in one situation and then a completely different guy. Like, I mean, the fact that, you know, he's supposed to be buddies with Magic, and then behind Magic's back, he's talking about, you know, Magic being bisexual and all these other things. Mm-hmm. Again, no one likes a guy like that.
Nobody likes a guy like that. Nobody.
Certainly even how he walked off the
field. But you know what, Rick? And beyond that, though, and you're right, I'm not taking that away from your point. But beyond that, though, Like Jordan went to the gym, put on 15 pounds of muscle, dedicated himself to being even better than he already was after winning a scoring title, after being, you know, the slam dunk champion and being the biggest basketball player on the face of the planet. He felt like he earned that moment where he could be on the other side of that handshake where his team was advancing and the Pistons were going home. And Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons didn't give him that satisfaction. Like, it's almost like something that he had worked toward was taken away from him. And there's nothing that he can do to get that. Nothing. Nothing can change that.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, in Jordan on record during the documentary saying it was actually, it felt better beating the Pistons than it did winning the championship. Like, that's how important that Eastern Conference Finals was for him.
Yep.
You're right. I mean, to not have the recognition. I mean, that's what would eat at you. Like,
the recognition from them, not from anybody else, but from them.
Yeah, from them to shake your hand and be like, you were the better team and you deserved it.
Exactly.
I get it. All right, today on ESPN Daily, with Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, now a Green Bay Packer, is there a shorter clock on Aaron Rodgers' time at Lambeau Field? Hear more on potential quarterback controversy in Green Bay. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. I think it's call-worthy. So we don't need that. But Ian Rappaport is reporting that the Ravens have beefed up their O-line with some veteran experience, he says, agreeing to terms with former Seahawks offensive lineman DJ Fluker. The deal is pending the physical for the one-time first-round draft choice. So, boy, the Ravens, they do it right. They really do, Chris. It's amazing. Every box, it seems, that they check.
You know where it starts, Dave? It starts with the owner hiring the right people and getting the hell out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And between Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta, they run that franchise, and they've got a hell of a head coach in John Harbaugh, and then it just seems like they reload every single year. Yeah, they might have a down year here and there where they have a losing season, but, I mean, you're talking about the Ravens contending for the AFC North title and being in the playoff picture almost every single year.
Yeah. If you had to rank the most well-run, most efficient franchises in the NFL, I give you three teams that you could go with. Don't they have to be there?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the Ravens are there. The Steelers are there. The Patriots are there.
Yeah.
Like, those would be the teams that I think are like flagship franchises of the NFL. Once upon a time, I would have put the New York Giants there too.
That's a while back now.
Yeah, they've fallen pretty far. You know who's also well run and they don't get the credit that they deserve because they do get a lot of attention from the media? The Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are a well run organization. They really are. But because you have such a polarizing owner, general manager like Jerry Jones, maybe some people think it's a little more dysfunctional than it actually really is.
Let's go to the calls, 800-919-3776. Itzik in Long Island. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
We're good.
Good. Before I compliment which one of you that had the decency to actually feel bad for Mr. Dolan, which you never hear of, I just want to tell you that if the whole world was like Charles Barkley, it would be a much, much better place.
It would certainly be a more entertaining world, that's for sure.
You're not kidding. And what I want to say is to so many knuckleheads out there, if you walk down the street in New York and you ask anybody about Charlie Dolan, you know, if they all say, oh, he sucks, we hate him, or Phil Jackson's an idiot, check this out. Mr. Jackson gets all the respect in the world, and he sat back and they made fun of his Zen, and he collected $14 million a year, okay, and is laughing at all of us for making fun of him. But more importantly, Mr. Dolan, if your kid had cancer, if you're sick, the guy all he does is gives millions of dollars. He spends millions to make the fans happy. He decided to form a rock band so people would like him. And the gentleman who actually said he felt bad for him, we should all find much more empathy. This guy was born a billionaire, okay? You know, from the day he was born.
Hang on. We need to have tremendous empathy for James Dolan?
Yeah. See,
why?
That's your problem. This is your problem. I'm not being a wise guy to you. see, that's why so many people, and even to this day, it just gets worse and worse. Mr. Dolan was born a billionaire. You realize the pressure that the
I can't. I mean, come on. You have people that are desperate to find where the next meal is going to come from, and I'm supposed to have empathy and sympathy for James Dolan. Now, do I think he gets unfairly treated at times? Absolutely. But stop with the swan. This whole, you know, violin playing for James Dolan is ridiculous.
And all I'm saying to you is that this, people have no empathy. It's like you love Michael Jordan.
Of course.
Jordan.
Well, empathy Michael for jo- what? What empathy, what are you, why? What are you supposed to have empathy
what
for?
What has he ever done wrong? Yeah, here's one for you.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like the Knicks have been dysfunctional for 20 years.
There's no empathy. Years ago, Mr. Idzig got fired from the Jets.
Because he stunk. Because he was terrible.
Hold on. Let me finish. But what I'll say to you is this, that's fine. But you know what? Educated man, went to college, had children, never in trouble in his life, so he gets fired. But there's billboards all over New York, fire Idzik. How do you explain that to his kids? Daddy, why do they all hate you? That's all I'm saying. You're so...
You know what he could say? You know what he could say? He could turn to his kids and say, they hate me because I stink at my job. That's what they could say. Because I was just not good at being a general manager of a football team.
Truthfully, I don't know which one that you guys are, but here's the thing. All you guys do is bash and bash and bash. I'm not kidding you. Michael Jordan, are you kidding or what? Okay? He's not a great guy. Charlie Barkley is a good guy. Michael Jordan,
Issues. Time out. Charles Barkley said some issues, too. I mean, no one's sitting here saying that Michael Jordan's a good guy. I mean, the conversation is that Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time.
I would assume. I'm not that familiar with it. I understand that. But you got on to different subjects, and I will tell you this. Here's the difference. Charles Barkley has empathy. He tells a story about he gave an alcoholic $100 on the street corner because the guy had a sign, said, I'm an alcoholic. Charlie gave him $100. Michael Jordan said, oh, if you can stand with a sign, you can go to McDonald's. But that's not true. The homeless can't get a start. And that's why so many people are homeless, because there's no freaking empathy. Okay? Oh, I'll give you one last one.
Please make it the last one.
I wish you the best in everything you do, but I beg you, okay? Mr. Barkley, okay, I said this to one other athlete about 2 years ago, and it cost me nothing but headaches. I thought he was the greatest person in the world. I begged you to please give me a phone call. I would love more than anything to sit down with you for an hour and help you get things straightened out. Social services, the reason so many people
all
are
right, I'm gonna have to gong you here. It was certainly an experience of a phone call. And I don't know what more there is to say about that.
Yeah, you can say what you want, and listen, I mean, what James Dolan does as far as his philanthropic work and everything else,
yeah,
how much
I mean,
money
the Garden of Dreams, unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But I mean, with the Idzik thing and everything else, as a professional athlete, you can hate it. And I mean, there are times when, you know, I'm sure some of these athletes, I mean, I didn't have Milo when I played, but I could only imagine, especially now with social media, that you're going to have some tough conversations. You know, why are they saying this about you, Dad? I mean, it's part of what you sign up for. It sucks. And it's probably, you know, every athlete's or GM or coach's least favorite part of the job is all the criticism. But that's why you make as much money as you make.
Well,
it's part of what you sign up for.
Typically, teams that don't have good quarterback play, whether you're a general manager or a head coach, you're going to get criticized a whole lot. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to in the NFL. If you don't have that position solidified, which they didn't under Idzik, then you're not going to be a very good team, and you're ultimately going to lose job security. But as far as what we said about James Dolan, man, I don't want to go overboard, but I think at different points we've all said that we felt like Phil Jackson victimized James Dolan. We felt like Phil Jackson took advantage of James Dolan. He took the check for $12 million a year and didn't do the job. Now, is that in part on James Dolan because he hired Phil? Yeah, but you can't fault an owner for being desperate to try to get this thing turned around. We've all made that point. So I get where he was coming from. He just took it a little too far.
Yeah, but here's the one thing I will say. And I think, you know, James Dolan, what he's done with the Rangers has been fantastic. I mean, what he was able to do with the Rangers. And, I mean, he was making some of the same mistakes early on with the Rangers. You know, spending big money on guys kind of past their prime, big names, mm-hmm. and it didn't work out. And then they changed their philosophy. I mean, they bring in, I think Torts was part of that. You got to draft well, get younger, get faster. And they've started to have, I mean, they're having a lot of success. Even this rebuild has gone really well for them. But I think where you can criticize James Dolan a little bit is you have to decide what you want as an owner. Do you want to have a team that wins and you may not get all the credit that you feel like you deserve? Or do you want to kind of have what Jerry Jones has with the Dallas Cowboys? And, you know, I spent all this money on this toy, so I want to be a part of some of these decisions. I want some of the credit. Because I think that's part of his problem, is that he likes to tinker with the New York Knicks. Like, you bring in Phil Jackson, who knows if, I mean, it turns out to be a disaster, but if you're going to tell the guy, listen, you're going to have complete autonomy, and then one of his first decisions is going to be, I think we should move away from Carmelo Anthony, and you don't let him do it, then, I mean, you're part of the problem. You're part of who should be blamed.
Look, the good thing about James Dolan is he will spend as much money on attempting to win as any owner in any sport. The bad thing is that he's heavily involved, and it's hard to look at and say it's coincidental that he's been the owner for about 20 years, and almost the entirety of his ownership, the Knicks have been close to, if not a laughingstock of the NBA, right? I mean, it's hard to defend him, and it doesn't mean that he's not a decent human being, and it doesn't mean any of that he's not a charitable guy. It just means that have they had success with his ownership of the Knicks? And the answer, for the most part, Chris, is no, they haven't really had success.
No, they haven't had success, Dave. And with most sports franchises, when the owner is involved with making decisions about the team, it typically doesn't work out well. Where I will disagree with Rick slightly is with Jerry Jones. When he took over, he made a tough decision to fire Tom Landry, and he hired Jimmy Johnson, and they won multiple championships. So Jerry Jones did have some involvement with the team's success, but James Dolan doesn't have anything like that to draw on when you talk about him continuing to be involved with basketball operations. And for me, that's the part that I worry about, especially when you make the decision to go out and hire a new team president that hasn't had any experience being an executive in an NBA front office. Now, he's a power broker in the NBA because he represents some of the best players the league has to offer, but I worry about it in terms of understanding how to build the infrastructure in order to draft talented players and develop them properly. You just don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah, for the record, though, Chris, with the Dallas Cowboys reference I made, it was the Dallas Cowboys now. This was when Jerry decided that he wanted to get rid of Jimmy Johnson and then have more of a say on what happened.
I got you.
Let's go to Don in Patterson. Don, you're next up on 98.7.
That last caller was terrible. He queued me up perfectly. He came in against the lane against me. I'll tackle him. I'll tackle him real good. First of all, how hot is Carmen Electra still? She's got to be, what, 50, 50-something?
Yeah, I would think she's well into her 50s, yeah.
When did they record that? Is that recently? I mean, I haven't seen her, like, on TV or anything, but she's, oof. Also, I wanted to ask Chris and Rick, you've guys been professional athletes for quite a bit. I mean, how would you have dealt with a guy like Jerry Krause?
It wouldn't have went well. It wouldn't have been a good relationship.
Like, if OCU Manura was in the back of the bus cursing him out, like, what kind of feeling is that on the bus?
Well, I mean, it ain't the first time a player has cursed out a general manager in front of other team members. That happens more often than a lot of fans would believe in professional sports. But it's just a matter of whether or not you feel like the general manager has the team's best interest and your best interest in mind when making a lot of the critical decisions. And for me, I felt like it got to a point with his relationship with Jordan where Jordan didn't trust that Jerry Krause was making the decisions based on what was in the best interest of the team.
Yeah, it's just it's unfortunate. I mean, everybody wants to be the top dog, and he got 5-6 championships in a row, and you want to break it up? I could never understand that. Like, what's going through the guy's head? You know, I mean, I know, like, the Celtics kept on to guys, you know, they kept guys a little too long and they didn't get anything in return. Maybe that was his philosophy. I don't know.
No, it was egos, man. Egos. Egos. Egos break up dynasties. And look what happened with Golden State. KD's
100%.
Ego.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yep. And I'll tell you what, Don. I mean, Chris's point, I mean, it does. I mean, with coaches, GMs, I mean, it doesn't usually, like, in good organizations, doesn't usually come out. But there are fights, screaming matches. I mean, it happens all the time. One of my most productive conversations I had with Milbury was an FU match that went back and forth. Actually, yeah, I mean, I actually earned a lot of his respect after that fight we had. But, I mean, stuff like that happens, man. You got a bunch of alpha males in a locker room. You know, I mean, stuff like this is bound to happen. I don't think Jerry Krause doesn't matter. I mean, did you see? I'm glad I watched it a second time. When they get on the plane and they're all dancing.
Oh, God, and he's dancing.
Oh, yeah, I saw. I know what you're talking about, Rick. Go ahead.
Jerry Krause was funny. Dancing. And Pippen's like, go sit down, Jerry.
No, that ain't what he said. That ain't what he said. That ain't what he said.
I mean, he was certainly an easy target.
Jerry, you're giving the PG-13 version of what he said.
He wanted to be one of the guys so desperately.
One of those people that wanted to be one of the guys and was so clearly not one of the guys.
That happens, though, man. I'm telling you. Like, you have... I mean, so many different personalities in the locker room between, you know, what the GM, the coach, assistant coaches, players. I mean, there's some crazy dynamics, man. There are absolutely some crazy dynamics.
But you know the one thing that I will never understand, though, Rick? When is winning not enough?
It wasn't on this
Like,
team.
You're winning championships. When is that not enough?
And six of them, Chris. Not like, you know, they had one and then they struggled for years. They won six in 8 years.
I mean, what sense does it make? You're at the All-Star break. And you tell the media that the coach is not coming back, and you know Jordan, if he decides he's not going to come back because Phil's not coming back, then that's his decision. Why would you jeopardize what the team is doing in that season by making that kind of comment? It's a statement that can only hurt your team. It can't help your team. Why would you say that? Again, that's why I always come back to, I think the rift between Krause and MJ happened when MJ felt like Krause wasn't making decisions that were in the best interest of the team.
Their everyday actions help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. So, I don't know if this is a compliment to us or just a compliment to Andy from Merrick, but Rick, yesterday I was told by someone, the best part of your show is when Andy from Merrick calls in to ask you guys those questions.
Yeah, I would think that's probably a negative towards us.
But a positive to Andy.
Oh, a huge positive to Andy.
Huge.
Yeah,
huge.
I think that's like I mean, that's...
That's a shot.
Yeah, that's a shot.
It's a shot. All
that's
right. Well, I feel badly about that, but I'm happy that Andy is getting the love and credit that he deserves. So, Andy from Merrick, you're on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. We'll see how much love I get after these questions today.
You're always so businesslike. I love it.
Starting with the big man, Chris.
I'm ready, Andy. I need to bounce back.
You do, and I'm going to bounce you back into the ACC again. So, since 2005, when you left the ACC to go pro, what player has recorded the most solo tackles in the ACC?
What player?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
No, he's talking about in the ACC, in the conference,
ACC,
right?
ACC, right? Yep.
I'm going to say Luke Kuechly.
You would be correct.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done, Chris.
Good job.
Way to bounce back.
Appreciate the soft toss, Andy.
Rick. The goalie
yes,
questions are too easy for you. Got to take you out of the crease and ask you, who owns the NHL's single-season record for shorthanded goals with 13 in one season?
I think I know.
You went from the crease. Not only did you get out of the crease, and I never spent much time in the crease anyway, you went from outside of the crease to most shorthanded goals.
I believe it's one of the greats of all time.
One of the greats all
time. I
mean, time.
Andy, am I right? I don't want to lead him down the wrong way.
No, you're leading him down a path.
The right path?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think I believe it's one of the... If I said to you, Rick, the top five players in the history of hockey, I think you'd include this guy.
Top five players. So that's, I mean, that's a pretty easy list. Top five players. You don't usually have a lot of top five players that are killing many penalties.
All right, we'll think about one that did.
One that did. It's not Gretzky. I mean, it's a short list. I mean, Orr's a top five player.
Mm-hmm.
Gretzky, Howe. Andy, let me ask. Can I get a hint? Did I play against during my career, did I get a chance to play against this player?
I do believe you would have played against him. He was in the early 2000s, yes.
Lemieux.
Yes, yes, sir.
Yeah, he's the only top five of all time.
But you would agree with that, right? He's a top five player.
He's one of the greatest of all time, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hadn't he, I mean, between the Hodgkins and the bat, dude, he was at a point during his career where the equipment manager had to tie his skates. That's how bad his back was. Dude, he used to, Dave, when I tell you, he's the only player. Now, I told you, I tell you this all the time. I was lucky. I got to play against Fedorov, Yzerman, Forsberg, but like, I got like the last wave of all those, you know, guys I idolized. He was the only player that when you're breaking down another team's power play that could legitimately stand on the, like, behind, his butt was almost touching the boards. His stick was on the goal line to my right. So on his one time side that you'd have to pay attention to because he could score from the goal line on a one timer from there.
Yeah. He one of the greats. I think, well, Andy, you might even remember this. Did he have like a game at the Garden where he had a power play goal, a breakaway goal, a shorthanded goal, a penalty shot?
He had like
shot,
five like, different goals five, scored in different ways.
And he got a standing ovation from the Rangers fans.
Yeah. He was incredible.
Incredible.
And just for your information, Lemieux, the record holder, Wayne Gretzky actually holds the next two highest levels for shorthanded goals in a season with 12 and 11.
Nice.
Not your classic.
Information.
Not
the information
your classic
you bring
to the
table
killer.
Is unbelievable.
All right, Dave. I don't think you've missed a question in a week, so we're going to give you a tough Ranger question.
Oh, God. I'm going to need help from Rick and Chris then today.
That's all right. It's a recent one. Marc Messier was obviously the last player to wear the number 11 sweater for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me the player who last wore it before Messier in a New York Rangers game?
Rick, you have any idea? I don't think Kelly Kissio was 11.
Was Mike Gardner 11?
I thought he was 22.
He might have been 22. He could fly, though. Ooh, could he fly?
Ever. Before Messier... Vic Hatfield was 11, but I don't think it's going to be him.
Andy stepped up his game today.
Did Graves ever wear 11?
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Nice.
That is correct.
Graves wore it for one game until his buddy and idol, Messier, came over and was traded to the Rangers.
And to be fair, I wasn't even actually making that as a guess. I was just trying to talk to the guys, but you jumped at it so beautifully, I'll take it.
And for what it's worth, Kelly Kissio wore it before before Graves. Dave, outstanding.
Oh, well, thank you very much. The three of us dominant in that that little trivia segment there. Andy, thank you. We love you.
Stay
we'll
healthy,
talk to you
guys.
Tomorrow.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.